service calls the Hubble again. If it stays operating, you know, long enough, it would now have a docking ring on the bottom of it. That was put up on the last flight in 2009. And the thing has been serviced 5 different times. With that docking ring, it's possible to take another vehicle and replace parts. And eventually the batteries could fail. They have these hydrogen type batteries attached to it. They can switch over to the more efficient lithium ion ones, as they are doing now with the International Space Station. Lighter, more powerful, and last longer. Eventually the 4 gyroscopes, big gyroscopes on Hubble, could eventually start to fail. And they have failed in the past. They've been replaced. Even the solar panels on Hubble have been replaced on some of these repair missions. So, and that's not going to happen with James Webb. That thing's supposed to last. They're hoping to get 5 or 10 years out of it. I think 10 years is the number that they're looking for. But after that, there's no service missions to James Webb. Anybody else, Roy, or anybody else? WS Webb.
Well, you never know what's going to be planned down the road. There are a lot of objects in space that we thought we stopped hearing or we stopped caring about, and yet they go on and on. So maybe they'll find some money in the budget to repair these things or start building even bigger and better ones out there. And one of the problems with the 2 trillion galaxy universe is a lot of them are at the very end of the light cone, which means we're looking back at images that are about 9 billion years old. So a lot of those galaxies are really kind of proto-galaxies. You know, we wouldn't really recognize them as things like the Milky Way. So you never know what those places have turned into in the last 9 billion years, because we can't see it yet.
Yeah, a lot of mysteries are going to be solved with James Webb, just like with Hubble. When that went up, we didn't know that the universe was 13.6 inches up to the end. So that's we get better at things. For instance, going up to the International Space Station, sending a crew, they stay in the Soyuz spacecraft and the shuttle for 2 days, a little over 2 days, before they dock with the space station. Now I just read that they've improved a third time. In the last 5 years, they went from two days down to six hours, 6.5 hours from launch to docking. They're getting better at orbital mechanics and, you know, keeping their enough fuel on board to be able to do that in a short period of time. And that was 4 orbits. Now they're going to do it in 2 orbits. Next flight up, drop it. You know, and this is the Russians. Wait until we start launching our own spacecraft from Florida. Be able to sure equal that as time goes on, but just 2 orbits, 3 hours, you'll be able to launch from Kazakhstan near Russia, from Baikonur Cosmodrome, and dock with the space station. They're going to do the first test with a Progress ship will be going up in a couple of months, dock with the space station. So if that works out, then they'll start doing it with their crews. But I can't wait until we have our own people going up on the Dragon spacecraft and on Starliner. But, that's delayed, too. We're looking at probably the first manned flight you'll see will be in 2018 from Earth's soil. Give it a year or two. Let's see, if there's any other comments or questions, put it up. I remember one of John KC2WGB say that our spacecraft was the New Horizons mission. He was always interested in the one that went to Pluto. Followed that quite a bit. Was always asking questions or even coming back with information that he had read about the New Horizons spacecraft. Took 10 years to get to Pluto. Finally got to Pluto. Took 16 months to transmit all the data back to Earth. And now that's complete. And then he was looking forward to the next mission. He was asking questions. Did they have an extended mission? And the answer turned out to be yes. And he knew about it. He knew it was going to get to this MU-69, Kuiper belt object, possibly 30 miles in diameter. We're not sure yet, but it's on the way to pass that Kuiper belt object, KBO they call them, in 2019, New Year's Day 2019. So he would have loved it to find out the results of that. We're gonna follow it for him. It does have an extended mission, and they're actually looking for possible objects beyond that. NASA or Jet Propulsion Laboratory has the funding to continue on out to this new object in 2019. My guess is they'll probably get another extended mission beyond that. It's running on plutonium, 238, radioisotope thermoelectric generator, and it's got a lot of years left in it. Drop it. You know, it could be another Voyager type of spacecraft. Definitely going to leave the solar system. Not as fast as Voyager. Voyager had an extra speed because they picked up more gravitational assistance than the New Horizons spacecraft. But now they're talking about NASA is getting funding or trying to get funding for another spacecraft to go back to Pluto. So they think they have a chance 12 years from now. Seems like a long time. But 12 years from now, maybe launching another spacecraft to not only go to Pluto, but to have another part of that separate from that flight. And one will go into orbit, and maybe another one will go down and land. Plans they have for the far distant future. Any questions or comments? But that is WS2M.
Not bad for a mere planetoid, eh?
I think that's going to change. You know, just like politics, you know, things change from one day to the next. They pushed that through, became a planetoid, a dwarf planet. I wouldn't be surprised someday they changed that. They found out now it has five moons going around. They knew it had one, Charon going around it, but now it's five. It has somewhat of a, I mean, it's a very rarefied, but it does have some kind of an atmosphere. Pluto does. Probably mostly nitrogen, but it's got, you know, different high hills, low hills, and valleys, and plains, and I think it's quite active. So, you know, the ruling that they came with, and it was only, what, 8 years ago, and then they decided to downgrade Pluto, dropped it. You know, when New Horizon was launched, you know, like I said, it took almost 10 years to get there, I think 9.5 years to get to Pluto. When it was launched, Pluto was a planet. All of a sudden, it's not a planet. if they had downgraded it then, I wonder if they would have got the funding to launch New Horizon. Roy, do you have any other comments for the net? AC2GSWS.
AC2GS. Yeah, sure. Yeah, we live in the age of branding. So the brand of Pluto being a planetoid is different than it being a planet. And you recall that the whole reason why we called all these darn things planets is it derives from the meaning wanderer, because people just looked up in the sky and these objects were wandering about. So I assume Pluto is wandering just as much as any planet is, so what the heck.
Yeah, I agree. I'll have to send a letter to Neil deGrasse Tyson on that one. But he wasn't the guy, I think he pushed it, but he wasn't the main guy. There was one guy coming from California, and he discovered Eris, a Kuiper Belt object. He found out it was about the same size as Pluto, and there was a couple other ones, Maki Maki, and they kept finding these things. Still are. And they, what are we going to do, call those planets? I would have said, yeah, sure. But don't downgrade Pluto. I was never a fan of doing that. So, let's see. Any other comments? I've run out of space material. Back over to you, Roy. I know you're good with physics and all. And what goes on in the subatomic world as well. I'm a little light on that, but I'm sure you're going to get questions, emails. You might want to give out your email one more time before it gets any later. Other people will probably go to bed, and you might want to do that. Roy is going to be doing the mailbag from now on, so maybe you want to give that out. Back to you, Roy. WS1.
Yeah, sure. This is AC2GS, and the email address is technet@ac2gs.com. That's Alpha Gamma 2, Alpha Charlie 2, Gamma Sierra. AC2GS.com. And if you got any questions about physics, I like physics. So feel free to ask about physics if you want.
Yeah, I know you're good with the speed of light, time travel, and whether it's possible to go forward in time, backward in time. There's quite a few discussions like that on the net. So that'll be good. Some of the people that used to send the emails in, might not even be aware that it's making a comeback. There's no way to really advertise that except here on the net. Very good. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
Good question.
I heard questions. Go ahead.
WS2N, Casey, handle with Sam. I didn't hear when the New Horizons probe was going to reach its next destination. I missed. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Popped in and out there, so I missed the name. Sorry about that. But yeah, the New Horizons is going to intersect on New Year's Eve 2019, so we got a little over a year. In a couple of months, and then it's supposed to go a lot closer, like 10 times closer to this Kuiper Belt object than what happened with Pluto. Pluto, they stay at a bit of a distance, but they have these lorries, these long-range cameras on board, and that's why they're able to see such detail. But they're going to go even closer to this. Whether it's going to be, something that they've never seen before, where they're going to be shocked, or is it just going to be a rock flying by, we don't know yet. I heard one report that said it might be a binary thing. you might find that there's a, it's got its own moon, and it's trying to tell. Went up in an airplane, a 747, let me drop it. Just a couple of weeks ago, and something called SOPI, SOPI is the Stratosphere Observatory. It's got a mirror as big as Hubble sticking out of the side of 747. It's a NASA airplane, and they knew exactly where this object was going to be in relation to a star behind it on a certain date at a certain time. They wanted to find out information about it with light passing it. They were going to use spectrographs to be able to tell what kind of rarefied atmosphere, what it was, maybe what it's made out of. And they did that a couple of weeks ago. I haven't heard the results yet. Let me drop it. But it's amazing that this thing is, you know, billions of miles away. Pluto's, what, 39 astronomical units, and this thing is further. Probably another two or three astronomical units past that. And an astronomical unit being the distance between us and the sun. So that we can get some kind of little information like that from an airplane flying over the Atlantic Ocean looking at this object with the star behind it. What's going to happen when this spacecraft comes creeping up on it? I think less than 6,000 miles from the object, they're going to be taking pictures. And what kind of details they're going to find out about it. And what's that going to reveal about all these other possible Kuiper Belt objects that are out there. Back to you. I missed the name. We'll have to end the call again. KC1 something or other.
I have to apologize just a little bit. I'm up in Connecticut. It's KC1 off mic. KC1 SAM. Yeah, that's phenomenal that they can predict that accuracy and fly over the Atlantic and in the eclipse of another star. That's phenomenal to me. Anyway, I didn't miss when the next approach was going to be, New Year's Eve on 2019, which is not that far away. They'll probably have something else in their target when they're done with that one. That's great. I find back over to you, Paul, and thank you very much for answering.
Yes, and okay, very good. I got the KC1 SAM. And that SOPI airplane that they used, 747 with this big telescope sticking out of the side, has been operating for quite a few years now. I think about 3 or 4 years ago, the actress from Star Trek, one that played Lieutenant Uhura, she was the communications lady, and now she's older, but she's actually interested in science and got to go on that flight and actually do something. Into this stuff. And she got to operate some of the equipment and flew on that flight. So I thought that was amazing. Very good. Any other questions or comments?
By the way, that was Michelle Nichols.
Very good. I can remember the people in a lot of movies. I can remember the people. Name that's in the movie. I cannot remember the actors that played that part. It's terrible. Force and call signs for it. Another guy that actually became a scientist. What's his name? Pat May, or his name? He's now a physicist. And he was a rock singer years ago. We will rock you, you know that song. So from Queen. Now he's a physicist, and when New Horizon was passing the Pluto, he was in the audience with the other scientists. He was interviewed by Brown Stern is PI, the principal investigator for New Horizons. He got to interview this guy, and the guy actually contributed something, you know, some kind of experiment that they were running. You never know what happens in life with people. Any other comments?
Just that physicists are very interesting people, and you can't really label them all the same type of guy. Everyone who says everyone is the Big Bang Theory Sheldon has not talked to too many physicists. They come in all shapes and sizes and different types of flakiness. They're a very interesting bunch of guys to talk to.
Yeah, I think I'm different fields now. This guy, Alan Stern, the principal investigator for that New Horizon mission. He started out, all intentions of becoming an astronaut. He was going down that road, and, you know, that didn't work out. He went this way, and now he's, like, top of the field in that department. So, you go for one thing, and you wind up doing something else. That's why education is so important. Any other comments? Roy, or anybody else? Okay, nothing heard. I've run out of material, Roy, so... I've come to a grinding halt unless somebody else has any questions or comments. If not, I would bring the net to a close, but on the early side. Back to you, Roy. Hope you got something.
Well, you know, we could talk about time. You brought that up. A couple of months ago, some guy had this very odd idea about Higgs bosons and how he was going to patent an invention that would turn a 50-pound weight that could be carried in his pocket around. And I did a little bit of math on that, and it usually ends with the entire world exploding. So, you know, I mean, it's up to you what kind of subjects you want to bounce around.
You have that in result. I have a physics question.
Okay, somebody had a physics question, so we'll go to you. And I didn't hear you call or name, so we'll turn it right back to you.
Do I have it?
USO.
It's KC1SAM. You have a question on the physics. They say matter can't be destroyed. I mean, it has to always be in one form or another. Well, how then can it be annihilated? Matter meets antimatter, becomes annihilated. What happens to it?
Not that matter cannot be destroyed. That's a kind of shortened and erroneous description. Mass energy can neither be created nor destroyed. You can turn matter into energy. You can turn energy back into matter. But you can't just make it go poof away.
Terminology was wrong, but I had that in the back of my head. But what happens then when they say it's annihilated? What happens to it?
The matter is converted into energy. If you take an electron and you take an anti-electron, which is a positron, and you bang them together, you will produce gamma radiation. The amount of radiation equals the mass energy of the electron and the positron that you annihilated. So mass energy is conserved. So is momentum conserved. You know, a lot of things that we take for granted are conserved in these types of reactions. So when a positron hits an electron, one photon doesn't get produced because momentum would be screwed if that was the case. So you have to have two photons emitted to balance the momentum.
And what is gamma radiation? Is that a particle of some sort also? Or is it just wavelength, or what is it?
It is a packet of electromagnetic energy. Photons are the force carriers of the electromagnetic force.
So it's a photon of some sort.
Gamma rays tend to be rather high-energy photons. You know, if you ever see that spectrum illustration where they show you RF at one end and infrared, then visible light, then ultraviolet light, then they talk about X-rays, and somewhere around the X-rays they superimpose gamma rays. So gamma rays are basically just high-energy electromagnetic waves. They're in the same family as the radio waves we know and love.
I appreciate the answer. I always wondered about that little bit of that little twist in physics. It never made any sense, and now it's a little bit clearer. Thank you. Casey One, Sierra Alpha Mike. Back to you.
You're quite welcome, Sam. I mean, the problem is that the popularists very often simplify things to the point where nothing makes sense anymore. And you know, it's a slippery slope. If you make something simple enough so that everyone sort of understands it, it ends up not being true. So what's the point? But that's my soapbox. Anyone else with any questions about physics? Or anything? What the heck?
Boy, years ago I read, let me see if I have it, U.S. Line, I read that in space, out in the middle of nowhere, there are, I think they said, X-ray class, there's situations where X-rays are coming together with other X-rays, and it's two forms of energy, and you know, they're intersecting, and if they're in phase and they hit each other, they actually create matter. You know, there is matter being created out in the middle of between us and the galaxy somewhere. So it's possible that you could have energy, you know, mixing with other energy, actually winding up with a solid substance. I don't know if it becomes a quark or a gluon or, you know, I'm not sure what it becomes. I can't imagine it becoming an electron, but I guess that's possible. I don't know if you've ever read anything like that, but that's one way of doing it. Because, you know, we're used to the idea of having a nuclear explosion and this energy, you know, 4% of this uranium that explodes actually becomes part of the explosion. And the efficiency is kind of low on a regular fission bomb. But, you know, the idea of waves combining and intersecting with one another to create matter, you know, that's not, you know, we don't see that every day. Back to you, Roy.
Well, like they say in Facebook, it's complicated, unfortunately. They just say it's complicated, but I hear the unfortunately. It is possible, but under very, very rare circumstances. Electromagnetic waves cannot interact with each other. So purely on an electromagnetic wave level, you can't have two electromagnetic waves summing together unless they interact with some type of mass, a sensor, a wall, you know, whatever it is that you use. Now, if it's a high enough energy of photon, high energy photons can decompose into matter-antimatter pairs. The same way that I mentioned that a positron and an electron can annihilate each other and give you two gamma photons, two gamma photons can interact and, they condense into matter-antimatter. Then any kind of photon that hits that virtual antimatter-matter duo and interact, but you need some kind of a non-energy intermediate to interact with. That's the problem. It's easier when you use very high energy photons, but under low photon energy, it doesn't happen at all.
EG201. PCV.
Okay. All right. All recognized.
Something V after that, but we missed the prefix. KG2RY.
Gene and Sheldon.
I have KG2RY and then G and Sheldon. That's all I heard on the second station.
K2VCV. K2 Victor Charlie Victor. Do you copy?
K2 Charlie Victor, yes. Very good. And then we heard the first station KC2RY first, but we'll go to that station first. Go ahead.
This is KC2RY. My name is David. I hope everybody here is having a fantastic evening. And listening to all these words, you know, in my mind, it comes up a question, you know. The question is, you know, before all of this knowledge existed, what did people actually believe?
Well, David, they believed in a lot of things. Religions, mythologies, spirits, ghosts, goblins. One half of a dragon, the other half of a chimpanzee. Human imagination is fraught with all kinds of explanations for why everything happens.
USL. But, you know, if this knowledge didn't exist, some knowledge would replace it. There would be some other understanding of, you know, what you're saying.
Not necessarily, David. You have to remember that if you go far enough back, unless you don't believe in evolution, we were a little bit smarter than chimpanzees. And so, you know, there wasn't a lot of discussion about gravity, inertia, momentum, symmetry, mathematics, geography, all kinds of stuff. You just kind of look for the next meal, and that's about it. I won't go into the lesser motivations of animal life, but that's all we did. It was only until later that we sat around staring at the sky and saying, why?
Yes, no, but don't you believe that, you know, if there were different alphanumeric characters created, different ones from the ones that we know, somehow everything that followed could have been completely different. The whole understanding of the universe could be some other thing. Go ahead.
Well, you know, we're getting philosophical once again. We often get philosophical, us too. There are many roads to Rome. There are many ways to the truth. We don't need to use the Roman alphabet. The Russians use Cyrillic alphabet, and they pretty much agree with our science. The Chinese use their own alphabet, and they agree with our science. So it's not as simple as alphabets. Alphabets are historical in nature, starting with cuneiform and ideograms and moving on to Phoenician writing that changed with the Greeks and then changed with the Romans. And now we got it because the Romans conquered Europe and we came from there. So it's historical, but it's not the only road to Rome.
So I agree with you, but I will say one more thing before I go. You know, any truth that can be interpreted is not the truth. It's something else. I don't know what it is. KG2RY.
Again, philosophical. Do I know the absolute truth? Certainly not. Hopefully, I know a little bit more closer to the truth today than I knew a year ago, than I knew 10 years ago, than I knew 30 years ago. So it's out there on the horizon. It's a place that I will never reach, but the journey is fun enough.
If the truth is really here and now, right in the present moment, if there's something that is in the exact moment that we're in, then it's the truth. And the truth also is something that can't be interpreted. It can't be judged, and it can't be measured. The truth is beyond any comprehension. KG2RY.
2MPG.
Oh, standby. This is WS2M. I know KC2CV, I think it was, that wanted to comment next. Go ahead.
This is K2, Victor Charlie Victor, K2VCV. My name is Gene. I've been in Selden, and I always enjoy listening to the net. And I have a question. Before you mentioned about Venus having the greenhouse effect, do you think that global warming is an issue here on the Earth that might be headed in that direction? That's question number one. Question number two, You mentioned the spectrum. Do you think the spectrum goes to infinity from, the highest spectrum that we know, the highest frequency that we know? Back over to net. This is K2VCV.
Okay, very good. I am Key there. I was the one that mentioned the Venus with the so many clouds and creating that runaway greenhouse effect. That could very well happen here. But there's a theory that this is all cyclical, you might create a runaway effect for a period of time, but Earth might be just the right size, spinning at the right speed, having a moon going around at the right time, keeping Earth's axis straight, everything's coming into play. So it might be cyclical, you might find every 50,000 years or so something changing, going into an ice world, and going into a global warming type of thing, with or without the effects of what we do here. I think we could just accelerate that, where we could wind up going closer to the Venus model, but never getting there. That's what I think. Now, Roy was talking about the spectrum. Does it go on to infinity? What do we go up to? Gamma rays? I don't think we go beyond that as far as we know. Roy, over to you. AC2GSWS2M.
AC2GS. It depends. Classical physics would have electromagnetic waves just going higher and higher and higher frequency and approaching infinity. Quantum mechanics kind of disallows that, because quantum mechanics has a point where you cannot divide something in half. And in this case, it would be the wavelength of the ever-increasing frequency of your electromagnetic wave. When it's 1 meter, you cut it in half, it's half a meter. That's fine. A quarter of a meter, eighth of a meter. Now, when you get to very, very, very small lengths called Planck lengths, theoretically, no length can be shorter than a Planck length, because the very fabric of space-time is made up of those little lumps of length. And so eventually you come to a theoretical quantum mechanical limit. You also have other problems. The energy of such a high energy photon is going to decompose into matter-antimatter pairs. So you have it both ways. So there is some limitation. You cannot have an infinitely high-frequency gamma ray. They're all gamma rays, by the way, whether they're low-intensity or high-intensity. The original meaning for gamma rays is induced by some form of radioactive decay. X-rays are formed from the interaction of electrons. But the frequencies can only go so high, and then the laws of physics get in the way.
Very good. This is Gene, K2VCV. Thank you very, very much for that, for the answers on that. I really appreciate it. There's two other questions I have. With the Fukushima Daiichi power plant and also the Chernobyl, catastrophe or whatever, cesium-137 in the atmosphere, I don't know if it's propagating where it's causing a lot of cancers. I was concerned about that. Could I get your input on that? And Dr. Roy, could you please repeat your email address for questions? This is K2VCV, Gene and Sullivan.
Yes, sure. Let me see if I have it. Very good. The email address is technet@ac2gs.com. Again, technet@ac2gs. Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra. And most likely the cesium that has been spread in the upper atmosphere is going to increase the probability of cancer. A radioactive material is carcinogenic. What's the percentage? I don't know, and no one else really knows for sure. And one more case of cancer is a terrible thing. But it's already done, so there's not much you can do about it. And the surprising things that are radioactive that we sort of take for granted, although they're low intensity. I'm sure if you go to your kitchen, you have a couple of bananas there. They have radioactive potassium in them. They're decaying. They're not dangerous unless you eat a couple of shiploads of bananas, but radiation is part of our existence. If you go to a basement with cinder blocks and such, there is radon gas slowly emanating from that. It's kind of difficult to divorce yourself entirely from nuclear decay products.
Very good, Dr. Roy. I appreciate the comments on that. Yeah, I'm very familiar. I've been doing some research on gamma spectroscopy, and I have a detector that has a sodium iodide detector with the special tube that amplifies the source of the light, a photomultiplier. And I remember back, if anybody has an R390 receiver, the meters were coated with the special chemical radon, I guess, that would emit light, like the old watches where you could see the hands at night or whatever. You could see the meter movements at night with an R390 radio. And I think at one point they tried to take the meters out and throw them in the garbage or someplace because they were radioactive. Yeah, you put a Geiger counter next to the R390s, of course they'll go off. Very good, sir. I appreciate the information, and thanks for everything. This is K2VCV, Gene and Sullivan.
You're welcome, Gene, and I don't know if you remember historically, watches used to have radioactive material so that they glow in the dark, and they hired women for some reason to do that work. And what they would do is lick the brush and put the radioactive material on the brush and paint the little hands of the clock, and after about 30 years of doing that, a lot of them had mouth cancer. So at least we live in more intelligent times. I mean, when I was younger, I was a chemistry major, and I was exposed to asbestos and benzene and all manner of toxic things. So, we live and we learn.
Absolutely, absolutely. I tell you, I remember the watches and also the story about the women. They would actually lick the brushes before they, to get them nice and sharp and then dip it in the radium. But the next day they came back, to do the same thing. They would, lick the brush again and then find out years later they got a lot of cancer patients from that. Gentlemen, thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it. And I'm going to sign off and listen to the rest of the net. This is K2VCV. Selden, New York.
Okay, this is AC2GS with apparently the physics hour. Anyone want to ask any questions? About anything?
There was a station in the background as you were talking. Let me stand by one.
Sure, that was me. Tritium is the isotope you're looking for. AC2, FHL.
Okay, tritium. Okay. Very good, SHL. And, I had, when I was younger, Lionel set, and all these little street lights, about that hundred, all lined up, up and down the little towns that you would fill on, Lionel set, and all the lights, they were lit by radium. I mean, they were all radioactive. Sit around, you put a whole bunch of them together, see how top bright it could be, look inside it. Probably did all kinds of damage to my eyes, didn't even know it. Back to you, Roy.
If tritium is still available, you can get it at eBay. They have it in little keychain things so that they glow in the dark. The one good thing about tritium is it's primarily an alpha emitter. So paper stops it, a lot of different things stop it. So if you just don't do anything silly like stick it in your mouth and swallow it, you're probably not in too much danger. But obviously if you start to apply it on your tongue, that's not going to be very, very safe.
Well, do you remember Yeptoware? Yeptoware, an alpha emitter.
You mean the uranium?
I'd have to look that up. What is in Yeptoware?
I have this vague memory that they used some kind of uranium-based material in covering it or something. I think it was uranium that was doing it. Because, you know, it was a wonder chemical at that time, that week. So they threw it into the mold, and, you know, they didn't care. I mean, I still remember my dentist telling me stories about he put his feet in a fluoroscope at a shoe store, and there were people irradiating their toes and watching them wiggle all day long. Jack?
Yeah, my father told me similar stories about putting his feet in that machine. And also, if you have granite countertops, in there, people bury their food on there. Airline pilots get more, airline workers get in trouble a lot by air. They receive more, a higher dose per year than the average nuclear worker, actually. I'll leave it there. Casey, do a picture. Thanks for listening.
Yes, high altitude exposure can be dangerous, and a lot of airline companies put that into an equation and make sure that someone isn't up there for way too many days. But again, you know, being alive is living in dangerous times. There's nothing that's 100% safe. So, you know, the next time you have a banana, you know, keep in mind that that's a radioactive source you're swallowing.
Bye, Jack.
Say again?
Roy, comments, KD2FIU, George. I want to jump in for a quickie.
Certainly, George. Comment away.
1959, I received a wrist watch in the dark. The dots representing the numbers would glow. Wow. 2 years after that, my father took it away. Said, this is not good. I learned what it was about when I was in high school.
Yes, George, but it isn't just about one thing, you know? We figure out that one thing is bad for us, then 5 years later we figure out another thing is bad for us, then 10 years another thing is bad for us. And it's a never-ending cycle, unfortunately. So, yes, your father heard that radium is probably not the best thing to wear on your wrist for your entire life and took it away from you. But, you know, again, there was asbestos all over the place, and your father had no opinion about that because supposedly it was a safe mineral. You know, what could that do to you?
Yes, and he was long gone before asbestos was outlawed, but the awareness was there. And to picture this beautiful green glow of each dot, if you were to hide it in a dark place while you were a little child, I wish I still had that wristwatch.
Some nuclear reactors are damn pretty. I mean, they have this beautiful blue glow to them.
Just a little input. You know where I'm going with this. KD2FIU.
George.
I wonder what the half-life on that watch would have been for you.
Partial reception. That was partial reception from two inputs there. Come on back.
Let me see if I have it. Yeah, Roy, I said, I wonder what the half-life is on that watch he had. You know, maybe it's not glowing as much as it was years ago.
Well, it depends what it was made of. If it was made of some kind of radium, that's about 1,600 years. That's a long time.
I was going to say 2,000.
Very good. What are you going to do? Okay, I remember seeing this stuff all over as a kid, but now you don't see it. Now, I do have a wind-up clock, a wind-up radio. And it's everything in one. It's a radio. It's, you can charge your phone with it. No, it's good for emergencies. But it does have that same glowing light, some kind of radioactive material in it. So there must be something that's approved, because it's only a couple of years old, this radio. There must be something that's still out there that's approved, otherwise this thing wouldn't be on the market. What do you think, Roy?
Net time complete.
Yeah, I mean, it could be just phosphorus, and then it's just glowing until it kind of runs out of energy. Or they could have doped it with a little tritium. I think that's still legal. You just got to stay away from things like radium and such that are last 1,600 years.
Thought it was 2,000.
Phosphorus, but it stays lit. Like, I come back hours and hours later and it's still lit. But yeah, in the morning it is dark, so it's probably just phosphorus.
That is so sensitive to local light. All it takes is a barely perceptible night light or blue indicator in a room, and that thing sucks it up and reflects it. I have some reflective tape that, unless I douse every single power indicator light in the room, is going to be visible to me throughout the night, and there's no radiation there. It's purely phosphorus and reflection.
I'm sure that's what it is then. Okay, very good. Good to know. I was thinking about that about 6 months ago. I closed the garage door and here's this thing still lit. I don't remember that. And then, sure enough, I'm thinking maybe it's, old time, not radium, I know that was out, but, some other form of it, the phosphorus. So the phosphorus must absorb the photons and then release them. It must store them, somehow store it in that material and release it. That's something worth researching, how that works. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, fluorescence, phosphorescence, there's a lot of very interesting things that happen. A photon will excite an electron to a higher orbital state. Sometimes they bounce back down and re-emit rather quickly, and that's what we call transparent material. But sometimes it holds on to it for a while, and those are the fluorescent and phosphorescent type of pigments. So, light chemistry and all manner of things are very fascinating. I mean, I once worked at a American Chemical Society convention where a bunch of guys from Polaroid got together and discussed the chemistry of their instant prints. And, geez, it was real complicated stuff. I mean, those guys were talking about things that pretty much no one had the faintest idea what they were talking about. And, we just think of it as you just peel it apart and you wait a couple minutes and there's the image. But there's a lot of science behind all that.
And they didn't let you go to lunch with them?
I was the working grunt. I was the guy who was the head of the AV squad. I was the coordinator for everyone who sat there in the back and moved the slides up and down. It was a good job for a college student. And, actually, it was the first time I ever saw one of those slide machines. So, of course, because I had no experience whatsoever, I got to be in charge of it all.
Just trying to put the light aside on it, Roy, but, the way I am. Very good, very good. This is, it's been a good night. It's been a good net. I like the idea that it was a sidebar on what Newton really said. Very simply, and I think I kicked it off with the Earth getting sucked into the sun. I don't want to go there again, but it's been a good night. KD2FIU.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, George. I enjoy these conversations too. I in the back of my head, I get this image of the occasional guy with a glazed expression on his face and just kind of muttering as he walks away, saying, "I don't know what these guys are talking about." But I enjoy it, so,
I called away. I wish I had more input on that point to about the Earth stopping, because basic Newtonian physics
actually was crossing into me. I had to throw in a little bit of input, but I'm sorry I had to move away from that because I had a couple of comments in there that were very, very basic and perspective about it. And I'm sorry I didn't have the time because somebody else pulled me away at that point, but that was just a very, very good opening to something that we all need to understand about why we spin and what gravity is and the balance of force.
Well, you know, some of these are very, 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 very deep concepts. They're like onions. You peel one, then you got to peel another, then you peel another, and before you know it, your onion's gone, and you're still lost for words. You know, you could get a group of physicists together and ask them what the heck time is, and you'll get a lot of confusing comments. You won't get too much in the way of answers, ultimately, or there'll be half answers, but you know, the same with gravity. I mean, is gravity a force, or is gravity acting upon space-time to act like a force? I don't know. Neither do these guys.
Gravity is anti-force.
Well, no, you can't say it's anti-force because... then you're just saying it's a repulsion force, which is still a force. It's kind of difficult to be an anti-force.
Repulsive. That's anti. It's still a reverse.
Still a force. The vector is inconsequential to it being a force. The absolute is a force, and the vector determines the direction. You know, because you'll say almost any vector quantity has a direction and another one that has the opposite direction. So calling it negative kind of doesn't really add anything to the discussion, unfortunately.
Absolutely, it does. If you have force, you have to have a reverse of it. You couldn't have it without having a reverse of it.
But the way most people say it is there's an equal and opposite force acting upon an object. That's the usual way that people discuss it. They don't really talk about anti-forces.
Every bit of the force that is directed away will develop not only a force to spin around it, the force pulling it back will also develop a force to rotate it. And that is the most complex form of it. That it not only will rotate around it, that the complexity of that rotation around it will contain a complexity within of rotation within itself.
Okay, but what you're really saying is it precesses, which a lot of forces cause things with an angular momentum to precess around that angular momentum. So, okay, but, you know, not all theoretical particles obey that. Particles being acted upon by a gravitational field do. If you have something way out there in the very, very far distant space that's just shooting ahead, it's more of a classical fact that it just continues unabated for all eternity. It doesn't slow down, it doesn't stop, it doesn't spin. It has a momentum and it keeps its momentum for the rest of eternity until it hits the boundary of the universe, whatever that may or may not be. So, yeah, in complicated cases, there's complicated mathematics involved. I agree with that.
That's what makes the tomatoes grow.
Okay, potato, potato, tomato, tomato.
Here you're about to worry about an object in the middle of space. Does it really have any kind of force? It's not going. I mean, it could be going a million miles an hour in one direction, but as far as another object looking at it, it might not be, you know, if you're right next to it, you might consider it not moving. So that gets involved. involved with one of his thought experiments. You know, does this mass really have any kind of force? It's only got a force relative to another force. There's nothing around. It doesn't have